it all comes down to this. The battle between President George W. Bush and Senator John F. Kerry will culminate Tuesday as ballots are cast. And while television anchors and pundits adjust themselves and wax punditry, there'll be the analyzing of results all around, tallying up and distributing those valuable Electoral College votes Tuesday. Rachel Marsden is a political commentator and talk show host. She has written for numerous outlets. You can find her writing on her own website, www.rachelmarsden.com. Her program, The Rachel Marsden Show, can be heard weekly, Saturday nights at 6 Pacific, on UBC Radio CITR 1019 FM. We're bringing Rachel on tonight for her unique perspective as we preview Tuesday's vote. Having worked as a strategist and analyst, she's worked at Washington think tanks and network news and nationally syndicated radio out of D.C. Welcome to the commentary.ca, Rachel Marsden. Good evening, Ms. Marsden.
Hi, Jeff. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. How does this campaign look to you a day or so before the big vote?
Well, I think there's a real discrepancy between the way the campaign appears in the media and on television and radio and the way I think it's going to shake down. The media, if you were to believe everything you see and hear, has everybody at a dead heat, Bush and Kerry in a dead heat, and the nation evenly split, and they're all talking about what's going to happen after a tie is declared and what kind of legal wrangling is going to be occurring after that. I'm not jumping that far ahead, and I'm not willing to jump that far ahead. I think it's not going to be nearly as close as people figure it's going to be, and I think we're going to be surprised in that regard come Wednesday morning.
May I ask who you think will win the election, then, or is that...
I think George W. Bush has the edge, and notwithstanding my own preference, I think he's going to be the one who's going to win this one.
There were a couple polls out today. Just digging around for them here. The Washington Post tracking poll has a dead heat, 48-48 for both candidates. ABC News has Bush at 49, Kerry at 48. The Newsweek poll, the gap for Bush is a little larger. It's 6%, 50 for Bush, 44 for Kerry. You talked about this on your show last night, that polls are inaccurate or...
Right.
They don't seem to show the whole picture. So should I believe these polls that came out today?
Well, personally, I have zero faith in the polls that are being done right now in the United States, primarily because the sample sizes are so small. And if you really want to do a decent poll that's representative in the United States, you have to do sample sizes that are so large, and you have to do them in each state because it's each state's electoral votes that count towards the total. It's just impossible financially to do a poll that's that decent. So what you have instead are a bunch of small polls being done where there's maximum maybe 2,000 people being polled in the whole country. In Canada, even, a poll of 2,000 people is, it's all right. It gives you a decent indication. But in the United States, with a population that's several times our population, there's no way that you can, go with those polls as being valid, I don't think.
You said that you would give the, if you were, I suppose if you were betting, you'd bet on Bush probably, right?
Yeah, I would.
Is the closeness of the vote, though, is that something that we'll see on Tuesday, or will one candidate, now both sides say that they hope that both sides, that either whoever wins the election, whether it's them or the other side, that the victory is decisive. Do you think
right.
It will be decisive?
I absolutely think it will be decisive. I don't believe at all what some of the pundits are saying out there about having a rerun of 2000. I don't think it's going to be that way at all. I think that's wishful thinking on the media's part, because it would definitely get them ratings if we had, nightly news coverage of this kind of hype, who's going to get it in the end, and they'd love to drag it on, I'm sure, but I don't think that's going to be the reality come Tuesday night, Wednesday morning.
Do you think that the lead that Bush will have over Kerry, will that be more than 4 or 5 points? Or?
I can't really say right down to the percentage. I'm not a pollster, but I do think it will be a decisive enough lead. I don't think it'll be the same kind of landslide that Reagan had in his re-election,
right.
But I think it'll be something similar to it, yeah.
Is the closeness of the vote, though, the polarity in the country, is that surprising to you, that Americans are so divided, that there are two Americas, and I'm not just talking about John Edwards' mantra, but that on every major issue in the United States, there seems to be a great dichotomy between both sides. Is that something that's surprising, or is that something that's just expected in this kind of political culture, I suppose?
Well, I think division is expected in any democracy, so from that perspective, it doesn't surprise me at all, no.
How important is this election, not only to Americans, but to us Canadians who live so close to them?
Well, what happens in the United States impacts us because we are their largest trading partner and they ours. So from that perspective, it really does affect us. But their foreign policy, what happens around the world, really does impact our economy in a big way, and I mean in so many other ways, in so many at various other levels, it impacts us. So it's not surprising that people in Canada are getting involved in this election and have an opinion about it, and I think we very well should as Canadians.
Do you think it's sort of, I find it, personally, I find it distasteful when I hear people in Canada say, well, we know we prefer Kerry over Bush, but, you know, if suppose someone like Pat Buchanan came to this country and said, well, why don't you vote for Stephen Harper next summer, and we just raise our arms and, you know, cry.
Yeah, it's funny because Michael Moore is, there's a campaign underway, and if you go to the website www.chargemoore, there's a campaign underway to have Michael Moore charged in Canada for having spoken out against Stephen Harper and the Conservative Party in the last federal election here at the end of June.
Really?
But I had that young man who's heading up that campaign on my radio program, and I asked him, I said, you know, is it really hypocritical? I think it's hypocritical for us to say, you know, as Canadians, we're going to comment on your election down there in the United States because we think it really impacts us and the rest of the world and the direction in which the world is heading, you know, the global community. But yet, if one of your guys speaks up about our election, we're going to slap a charge on him. I mean, it's really hypocritical to me, and I don't agree with that. So, you're right, I have a problem with that.
Yeah. Let's break down the two candidates that are running. Let's start with the challenger, Senator Kerry. Mm-hmm. I guess if you were thinking about the campaign that he's run, he sort of faltered in the sense that he let his opponent, the incumbent President Bush, frame the parameters of the debate. I mean, we're talking about whether or not Kerry's a tough guy or whether he's weak, rather than the sins, if any, of this administration. Do you think Kerry failed in that sense to actually frame the debate?
Well, I think there are plenty of opportunities to attack President Bush on some of the things that he has done or failed to do in this last term of his, but I think John Kerry has really failed to put together a message, a consistent, strong message to present to the American public that attacks those particular points of vulnerability that George W. Bush has. And as a result, his campaign is just a series of ankle-biting positions where Bush states a position or states an achievement of his or his administration's, and Kerry just attacks it. And as George W. Bush said during one of the debates, a plan is not simply a litany of complaints or bellyaches. And that's essentially what John Kerry has done, and he has really failed to put forward his own consistent, strong messages to the public, and something positive that they can really grab onto, and that he could say, look, this is my position, and it's different from what he has done. And I think one of the reasons why John Kerry has had a problem with that is because he really can't stand on his record, because the guy's been in the Senate for 20 years, and really, I mean, what has he accomplished? You ask any Democrat out there, and they have a tough time coming up with something really important or groundbreaking that John Kerry has accomplished in his 20 years in the Senate.
He married well, though.
Yeah. A couple of times.
Yeah. I was reading this website called electoralcollege.com, I mm-hmm. believe, and they're breaking it down state by state, and they've
right.
got the polls for each state and how mm-hmm. they're giving out electoral votes now. And I checked it this afternoon, and they said that Kerry 283, Bush 246. A couple mm-hmm. of days ago, it was the other way around. The possibility is that Kerry could win this.
Well, I don't know where they're... Okay, first of all, I don't know where they're getting these projections from. In the last Canadian election, we had a bunch of pollsters doing seat projections, and we know what an abysmal failure that was. So I'm really questioning the not only methodology of this seat projection in the United States, but also the validity of it.
So the question then, I guess, is if it should care about by miracle or whatever, if he does win on Tuesday night, what would that mean, I guess, for the nation? What's the message there that they send? That by electing Kerry, was this a referendum on Iraq, or was this...
I think it might be a referendum on Iraq. I mean, there are several things that it can mean if they vote for John Kerry. The first is that, for whatever reason, I think this election is going to come down to a battle of the bases. And traditionally, I think the Republicans have had the better ability to get the base mobilized and get people out to vote on Election Day. And I think if John Kerry ends up winning this, it will be because, one, a lot more new voters got out to the polls, because traditionally the Democrats have the stronghold on new voters. Most new voters are Democrats, traditionally. So it would mean that, one, that more Democrats got out to the polls, more new voters likely got out to the polls. It would also mean that the GOP didn't get their base revved up enough to get out there and vote. And that's one of the things that would be really surprising to me, but I guess it could happen.
Does it really come down to those battleground states, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida?
It really does.
It really does. And
it does.
Every vote, I guess, suppose, counts in that sense, right?
Right, because what happens is, you know, if you get 50.1% of the popular vote in any one of those states, all of the electoral votes for that state goes to the person who wins the popular vote in that state. So it really comes down to the popular vote, and every vote does count.
Suppose Wednesday, Kerry isn't back in Boston bottling ketchup.
or hosting a radio show on Air America.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
What would you make of Teresa Hines Kerry as First Lady?
I really don't know what to make of her. I think the comment that she made recently about Laura Bush never having held a real job in her life was pretty offensive, and I think Laura Bush dealt with it in a classy way. I mean, first of all, this is a woman who raised children. She was a school teacher. She was a librarian. I don't know which of those wouldn't count as a real job in the mind of Teresa Hines Kerry. I mean, it's some lines like that that really irk me, but yet I don't think people are voting for a First Lady, and I don't think they should be voting for a First Lady. So I guess we'd have to see what happens if she gets into the White House, but I really don't think she's going to be a factor in terms of people going to the voting booth and saying, oh, you know, I don't know who to vote for, but let's consider the First Ladies. I don't think she's really going to be an issue.
You had a guy on yesterday on your show, mm-hmm. Who's a writer for the Bill Maher program on HBO.
Right.
And you asked him about which candidate would be better, I guess, for the state of comedy. And I guess Teresa Hines Kerry as First Lady would certainly...
Well, she'd be more exciting than her husband for the comedy community, I think.
The accent, that's something I was reading on the internet the other day, that you can't place the accent, sort of the Ariana Huffington sort of...
You mean for Teresa?
Yeah. Where is she from?
I believe she's from...
Mozambique, I believe, right?
Yeah, she was born in Africa, so technically she'd be the first black First Lady. so she's from Africa, but then she spent most of her years in Europe, and she was worked for the United Nations for a while as a translator. So she speaks several languages. From that perspective, she's pretty erudite, and she's well-read, but sometimes the way she comes across is a little rough around the edges. But hey, I mean, they are on the campaign trail, and I'm sure she's under a lot of pressure, and some people hold up better than others under that situation. So
my favorite,
have to wait and see.
My favorite line about her that I heard was from Imus, who said that, you know, this is a woman who criticizes Laura Bush, but, you know, she fails to recognize that she won the lottery, so...
You mean Teresa?
Teresa won the lottery.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah. She married up. And then her husband, her current husband, John, married up.
Yeah, well, yeah.
A couple of times.
George W. Bush, if this election is a referendum on Iraq, which I'm sort of 50-50, and mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the price of eggs and gas, I think, factor into people, you know, those red states, I think that's what they're thinking about when they're voting. If this is a referendum on Iraq, how do you think he's been able to weather that, the so-called catastrophic success of that, and still seem to be able to win a second term?
Well, I think people understand that George Bush is doing what really any other president at wartime has done, and if you look at books that talked about World War II after World War II was finished and several years after it was done, people were saying in those books that at the time the war was going on, there were a lot of people complaining about how the war was being conducted, what was happening. There were complaints all over the place, and it's war. I mean, it's ugly. There's nothing nice about war. You don't want to have to go there if you don't have to. And no, nobody's really happy about it. I don't think George W. Bush is thrilled about the fact that he's in a wartime situation. I mean, without the Iraq situation and without having to deal with the war on terrorism, I think the guy would be a shoo-in for office, but or for a re-election. But I think enough people are out there who realize that this is a difficult situation and we're in it, and 9/11 did happen, and you can't run from it. And even though things aren't going wonderfully in Iraq, they're going probably about as well as they could. And I don't think a lot of people are that keen on putting another guy in charge in the middle of a war. I think that comes down to it as well.
The Osama bin Laden tape of Friday, do you think that'll have an influence in what happens on Tuesday?
No. I think, for the most part, people are pretty much decided on where they're going to come down on this election and who they're going to vote for. I really don't think the Osama tape is going to make much of a difference. And really, if there are people who would allow that to sway them in any kind of way, I have a feeling those aren't really the types of people who are going to be running out to the polls anyway. I mean, anybody who's undecided at this point should be forced to go through a maze. It should be as hard as possible for those people to be able to cast a ballot, because if you're too stupid and ignorant to know by now who you're going to vote for and to know that based on the issues, then I don't want you voting, because you're going to screw it up for everyone else, particularly if it's close.
Are there other, Tuesday, of course, there'll be House races and Senate races. Is there anything else that stands out that I mean, first of all, do you think that the House and Senate will stay Republican, or is there a chance that the Democrats could overtake in either House?
Well, there's always that chance, but I think it's pretty solidly Republican in both houses. I don't think there's any momentum either way, and I don't really see any impetus there for any change. So because of that, I'm just going to say that I think they're both going to end up being in the Republican control.
We're talking to Rachel Marsden of www.rachelmarsden.com and the Rachel Marsden Show on UBC Radio CITR 101.9 FM, who's on the line to preview Tuesday's election. Let's talk about the media here for a sec.
Sure.
What outlets do you trust for getting news, or what are must-reads for you, I guess, is the question.
No, to be honest, I don't have any must-reads. I look at everything online. I listen to everything on the radio, on television. I go on the internet and check out internet radio programs from all over the United States. I read all sorts of different magazines, left-leaning, right-leaning, and from all of that information, I formulate my own opinions based on all of the rhetoric out there, all of the facts out there. I don't like to trust one particular news source.
Do you think, though, that, I mean, we don't get Fox in Canada.
Unfortunately not, no.
No, but the success of Fox, though, I mean, they're really out there. They say they're conservative. They say they're fair and balanced, first of all, but then you know that you can tell that they're conservative. But, and they're wildly successful.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that Fox is so successful when their agenda is so out there? And is that something that the traditional news outlets have not failed to realize, I suppose?
Well, I think when people tune into Fox News, they realize they're getting a different perspective from that which exists in the rest of the media. Very different from CNN or ABC, NBC, CBS, all the other networks. And I think that there is a desire for people to actually go out there and check out another point of view, and they're not getting that other point of view from these other media sources, and evidently not, because it wouldn't be so wildly popular if they were.
That's my take on American politics, is that why Schwarzenegger won last year and why Fox is so successful is that Americans, you know, are smart enough to know when they're being spoon-fed, you know, jive.
Well, there is a silent majority out there, I think, and it's obviously a very large majority considering the success of the station, the network.
And that'll be, I suppose, those are the same kind of people who are inclined to vote for Bush and to say, to hell with the sort of, I know better than you, John Kerry, I suppose.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, and that's precisely why I am predicting a big victory for Bush on Tuesday, because I think there is a silent majority out there. They're not making much noise. They're kind of minding their own business. They're paying attention. They're watching Fox News and bumping up the ratings for that network. But they're not sitting at home waiting for pollsters to call and answer the phone and give their opinion. But they are going to get out to the ballot box and make sure that their voice is heard on Tuesday.
Now, you talked about this at the top about networks hoping that there'll be some sort of 2000 revival for ratings. Do you think that this
I think there are probably going to be some challenges because I'm sure there are certain things happening in certain precincts that probably aren't too legal. I mean, there's already been some talk about that on the internet, and people coming out with various stories in early voting. And I know that the Democrats and the Republicans all are lining up their legal ducks in Florida already and expecting a challenge there in some way or another. But I think essentially there's going to be a decisive enough victory on Tuesday night that it's not going to matter if there are any of these challenges that pop up. And that's what I'm hoping for as well, and I'm sure for the sake of the stability of the country that everybody else is probably hoping that the same thing happens, except maybe for the news media. But, I mean, they're not going to be able to, I don't think, drag it on and on this basis, but I'm sure we'll be discussing, you know, in the aftermath of the election, we'll be discussing, you know, what the, you know, winner did right and what the challenger could have done better and that kind of thing.
We talked about the success of Fox. On the flip side, the success of satirists like The Daily Show, mm-hmm. Bill Maher, Dennis Miller, Weekend Update on SNL. Do you find with the people that you've talked to that call into your program that people are taking their news or getting their news from these alternative sources?
I do, and I think there are a lot of people out there, though, who just like to get their news in a funny way and get it quickly. In other words, it's kind of encapsulated for them, and they don't really have to go and look for it, and yet they can get a bit of a chuckle out of it, right? It's entertainment as well as informative, so I think that's one of the reasons why it's easy to swallow, it's not so dry. I think that's one of the reasons why there's a huge popularity when it comes to those programs.
And, well, let's talk about celebrity endorsements. And Bruce Springsteen was on the stump for Kerry last week. Barbara Streisand's been, you know, being Barbara Streisand.
Oh, half of Hollywood is stumping for Kerry. And I think the only one that Bush has right now on his roster is Arnold.
Or Kurt Schilling from, I guess he plays
from the Red Sox.
Yeah.
But he broke an ankle and couldn't make it out to a speech or something.
Do you think that there are people out there that get swayed by their favorite actor? Like if Ben Affleck says vote for Kerry, do you think that there are Affleck fans out there who will vote for Kerry?
Oh, well, I mean...
I mean, I guess that's part and parcel.
Well, you know, I think there are people who vote for a number of reasons, whether it be a candidate is hot. Like a lot of women after Bill Clinton won in 1992 came out and said, yes, I voted for him because he's hot. So people vote for candidates because they like their hairstyle, because they think they make a great drinking buddy, because they have a nice looking tie, because they dress well, because they could be, you know, somebody they'd like to go bowling with. I mean, who knows why people vote, and people do vote for very shallow reasons. But I'd like to think that they don't. The reality is that they do. So, yeah, I mean, from that perspective, maybe Ben Affleck standing up and being the mascot of the Kerry campaign is going to help John Kerry, or, you know, people coming out and listening to Cher is going to help John Kerry. But I think what the Kerry campaign is doing is using these celebrities as a means to attract media attention to his campaign so that people ultimately show up to hear what he is saying. I don't think it's really so much, you know, just because Ben Affleck says vote for Kerry that you're going to vote for Kerry. I think it's more, you know, Ben Affleck or Bruce Springsteen are at an event and, well, you know, it's more exciting to have them there and to see them there for the media and for the public and for anyone else who might be around and might be thinking of attending the event. They'd rather go to see them than to see John Kerry, but it's good for John Kerry because, you know, you have a captive audience because they're there listening to Ben or to Leo DiCaprio or Cher or Rosie O'Donnell, and while they're there, they're going to be listening to you, too.
What do you make, though, of, I mean, this is not just the Hollywood culture. I mean, I was watching an ad that Edie Falco made. She's stumping for an organization called Mothers Against Bush. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the Canadians as well? This sort of vitriol that people have for, I mean, I've never seen people hate Bush as much as some of these John Fogertys or Bruce Springsteens.
Well, it's, I mean, it is wartime. People have strong opinions when it comes to war. Nobody likes war. I think people generally are going to, you know, because it's such heated political rhetoric and it is the political season, you're going to have a lot of people who, you know, who just come out and say really angry things. And I think when this campaign is over, no matter who wins, whether or not Bush becomes president again or if John Kerry takes his place or whatever. I mean, I still think that there's going to be that kind of rhetoric around there, that kind of angry rhetoric. It'll always be there, particularly in a time of war. So I don't think it's anything particular towards George W. Bush.
Because I don't see very many people voting for Kerry because they like him, rather than they're voting for him because they don't like Bush.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Yep.
Will there be any surprises, you think, on Tuesday that we should look for? Do you think that...
There's always surprises in an election. And the biggest surprise to me would be if somehow Kerry manages to pull this one off. Then I'd really have to take a close look at what happened here and really where these voters came from. And, you know, I seriously believe, I mean, I've heard all of this talk that the Democrats are signing up tons and tons of new voters. And granted, most of the new voters traditionally have fallen to the Democrat or the Democratic candidate. But still, you know, show me a guy who's counting on the new vote to come out for him, and I'll generally show you a loser. Because they're not doing anything that hasn't been done before. And essentially, there's a constituency out there that just doesn't vote. No matter how angry they are, no matter how much they hate the guy in power or love the challenger or whatever the case may be, they're just still not going to get out and vote. And yet those same people would very willingly pick up their phone and talk to a pollster and tell them exactly what they think. So I think there's a bit of a discrepancy between what you get in the polls, even if they are accurate polls according to sample size, and what you get on voting day. So because there's such a discrepancy there and there's so many unknown factors that we really can't measure, even with polls, I think, you know, we could end up seeing something that nobody could ever have predicted.
I want to ask about the Rachel Marsden show. How long have you been doing that?
Since May. So I think this is our 25th show coming up.
Oh, really?
Time flies.
talk about the show and what you do there. I mean, for people who have never listened to it before, potential listeners, I suppose.
Sure. Basically what it is, it's an hour-long political week in review show, and we like to try to keep to hardcore politics, but once in a while we do some fun stuff and have a feature-like segment, or bring on a nutritionist or something like that. But generally speaking, it's hardball politics, and I like to do a segment every few weeks called the Battle Zone segment, where I have people from opposite ends of the ideological spectrum on the show, and they just duke it out, and I'm the moderator, and we just have a blast with it. And coming up on November 13th, in that segment, I have Sheila Copps and Stockwell Day, so that should be a
really
good time. Yeah, it'll be fun. But I basically like to talk about a pretty even balance of American and Canadian politics, and every once in a while we throw in something really out from left field, like Chinese foreign affairs. I had a Chinese foreign affairs expert on the show a few weeks ago, and basically it's we just have a good time, have people call in and talk to the guests and or myself, and vent about anything they feel is relevant to the week in review in politics.
And what's the response been from your listeners? Do you get a lot of listeners outside of the lower mainland area?
A lot. And I think one of the reasons is because my columns run in the United States, and through United Press International, they run all over the world as well. And we have a lot of listeners from Europe, Sweden. We had somebody from Sweden email the show yesterday as a result of something that they heard. Croatia, tons throughout the United States, tons of people down there. And from a whole bunch of different places in Canada as well. So really, because the show is online, it's accessible to everyone, and you don't just have to be in Vancouver to listen to it. So that's one of the reasons why I really like being with CITR. That and the fact that they're very open-minded, and they allow for a very wide variety of opinions to be on their station.
Right. Rachel, thanks again for joining us, and we'll be sure to visit the site and listen to the show next Saturday night.
Great. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thanks. The Rachel Marsden Show, Saturday evenings at 6 Pacific on UBC Radio, CITR 101.9 FM, and the website, www.rachelmarsden.com.